kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up, and how else do we start these off? But Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. Been not okay. I'm drained. Been moving a lot. It's been a busy weekend, and now I'm sitting here eating Brussels sprouts.
Why?
Well, Brussels sprouts are tasty, but they're not very filling. But I just wanted Brussels sprouts. I don't know what it was. Oh, also, just going through my freezer. Got a lot of extra crap in there. I'm one of those people that buys food that's on sale, and then they realize they bought a lot of food that's on sale, and now their freezer's full, so they got to go back and just find something they forgot they purchased. In this case, two bags of Brussels sprouts.
You're legitimately the only person I know who is eating Brussels sprouts for the hell of it.
And more people should. If you do them up, they can be pretty tasty. It's just they're unexpected because, as you probably know, there are more tasty things available to eat. So people don't typically think, go to the Brussels sprout. But honestly, for what they give you, they're pretty good. I just would rather be eating a pizza.
Yeah, me too. I mean, just, I don't know, Brussels sprouts, that's, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, like a lot of people eat tomatoes, and I think tomatoes are gross, but Brussels sprouts, sauteed in garlic and pepper and spices, cayenne pepper, and ends up tasting much better than you would think.
I'm not Mine a fan of raw baby. Tomato, but tomato products I love. So I don't know. Oh,
yeah, like tomato paste and tomato sauce, yes. But tomatoes, sloppy-ass liquid discs, no, I'm not a fan of those. They're disgusting, and I don't want them on my bread or my burger. I don't know how people do it. It soggifies everything it touches with Amen. Reckless abandon. It's terrible.
And seriously, pickles on burgers? Keep that shit the fuck off of my burgers.
I agree. Like, I won't go so far as to say they're disgusting because when McDonald's used to do it, I was like, they're there. But if I'm choosing to put it on there, nah, it's not going to happen. But
Everything soggy and they taste awful. I don't know. I'm not a pickle guy.
Are you only like base pickles, like just out of a jar?
Nah, I've never been a pickle guy. I don't know.
Oh my God. What about jardinera?
What the hell's that?
It's like a crazy medley of pickled vegetables. You usually get it on like things in Chicago, like hot dogs and stuff.
I'm going to guess no.
No. I'll put that mess on pieces now. It's good. Went to Chicago 2 months ago, had some on our Italian beef sandwich and on a pizza later on that same week. I came home and immediately ordered a bunch of it off of Amazon. I was like, I need more of this because, of course, you can't get real jardinera out here. So just like I'm about to buy a jar of boiled peanuts. Because the same thing, I am now obsessed with those. You can't buy them here. It sucks.
Boiled peanuts.
Boiled peanuts. Yes, sir.
Never heard of boiled peanuts.
Me neither until I went to that convention in Florida earlier this month. And all of a sudden, bam, boiled peanuts everywhere. It's a staple. They have it on the sign at the grocery store aisle. I mean, on the aisle. They have it on the sign at the grocery store for the aisles. Like, down this aisle for boiled peanuts. Like, you gotta be kidding me. Up here, no one knows what the hell that is.
See, now those I would try. Because I like peanuts.
Peanut patch, look them up on Amazon. Because when this episode is done recording, I'm ordering a giant jar of Cajun boiled peanuts to get delivered to my house. Because I really want some more.
Interesting.
Listeners are like, boiled peanuts? Sounds especially like boiled penis.
Yes, that I've been trying as hard as I can to enunciate the T.
It's a challenge. It's like, honestly, I thought you were trying to like pull the trickery out. Like, so tell me more about these boiled penis.
Tell me about the penis that you love in your mouth.
like
the penis 10. In your mouth? The peanuts in your mouth.
Yes, peanuts are delicious. I'm 10 years old, but I do love me some video games, so who cares?
George was right last episode. Dick jokes are never not funny.
He is correct. That is very true. I love me some jokes about the dicks. No, that's the funny part. You know, dick jokes are great. Vagina jokes, not so much. It's a weird thing. You ever notice that? I didn't until just now.
I don't think I've heard any vagina jokes.
Exactly, because they're not funny. I don't get it. They're just not good. But dick jokes are hilarious.
It's because dicks are made to be mocked and made fun of, where vaginas are meant to be appreciated and worshipped.
That's actually kind of good. I think you're right about that, because, yes, I'm going with that. That's pretty damn accurate to me. We're going with it. You heard it here on SML.
The woman's body is beautiful and immaculate and meant to be worshipped and loved, and a man's body is ugly and things just dangle around. Like, what the hell is with balls anyway? They just hang there.
They're just made for, as a weak spot. They're created as a weakness.
And dicks, those are just goofy looking. It's like an elephant trunk.
Pretty much, but at the same time, I'm not going to lie, I kind of enjoy having it. I was like, roar! Like, just make the big sounds. Walking around, do the babar walk. Penis. And it's just great. It's a good time.
Oh, man. Speaking of dicks.
What games did we review this week? Whoa, Leisure Suit Larry, get back.
Nah, we got some fun games to talk about. You ready to get started?
Let's get down to business.
Cool. First game to talk about tonight is called State of Anarchy, Master of Mayhem, developed by Lapovich, published by Sometimes You, released August 1st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $7.99. Simplistic top-down shooter that will put a smile on your face, fulfill your inner sociopath as you mow down enemies with guns and cars alike in a bid to pull off the world's largest heist. Brunel, what is this game?
You just described the entire game. But that's not a bad thing, because the guy said himself, a simplistic game, and that is exactly what you are getting here. You are playing a game with approximately 50 stages. I say approximately because you never know. It could be some unlockables that I'm not going to spill or anything. But containing basic running gun gameplay. That might sound bad, but I'm going to tell you something. I had fun with this game. I didn't care. It's a twin stick shooter. The game starts out with everything going to shit. And your guy goes, time to get rich. So first stage is get on foot, get to the bank, and rob it. And what that entails is hijacking a car, shooting psychos that are chasing you on the street, sometimes with bombs strapped to their chest, or blowing up cars that are driving around and shooting at you, or weird flying bird people who drop bombs from the sky, and then on and then on. Driving, running, or whatever it takes to get to the bank, and then when you run inside, there's a boss fight that usually, not really a boss fight, but I'll just say a slightly bigger bad that involves a guy behind the teller counter with a different firearm, usually firing at you while other enemies are chasing you around trying to kill you too. If you kill him, he will drop a weapon that you can pick up, and that becomes your new sub-weapon or sometimes new main weapon. You don't get to switch between the guns. So if you pick up the new firearm, that becomes your new firearm. Or if you pick up a new sub-weapon, that becomes your new sub-weapon. They weren't kidding when they said keep it simple. You can't even select between the stuff you got. Either you pick it up or you don't. And typically after that happens, you usually are greeted by a really awesome tune and a level-up screen. In which case you get experience points based on how many guys you killed and whatnot. And then you can level up within one of four skills. Usually, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's basically a speed boost, a accuracy bump, a firing rate bump, and I think a damage increaser. So nothing complicated, just enough to say, hey, my guy's a little stronger in these departments. But every once in a while, it's a really weird game how this works. Every once in a while, aliens will actually pick you up and take you into space.
Because why not, right?
Because why not? The world's gone to shit. Of course aliens are there. And when you're on the alien planet, which is where they take you, you find yourself running and gunning on the alien turf, shooting out turrets that the aliens have set up and weird space gobbledygooks that are chasing after you and shooting at you, culminating with stealing a spaceship and then flying through space, shooting at guys, crashing into planets, and just blowing up alien nonsense, and then crash landing on Earth, where you will proceed to continue robbing banks.
Yay! That is the
game! And I'm going to tell you again, I had a great time playing it, and even more so, that soundtrack. I said earlier. Oh my
God, I love the music in this game. I love the entire style of this game.
This needs to be mentioned. You already know I do the rhythm and pixels thing. I decided from playing this game, I was like, I'm getting this on there somehow. I'm going to choose a topic that's going to get this music on my show, because I liked it that much. I would level up my guy and just kind of let the system sit there and play that jingle. Because I love it. And every time, I can't remember what exactly true is, but the guy goes, here goes, or something. Like, I don't know what he's saying, but I love it. It was Sometimes simple can be very good. Other times, simple can be pretty meh. I feel like simple, in this case, worked out in this game's favor, especially when you factor in the low price point, which helps. Because don't get me wrong, if this game was $20, the best soundtrack in the world couldn't sell it. But for the affordable price they gave it, it works with the gameplay they give you. And it's a good time. I had a fun time with it, and I'm jumping ahead of myself here.
Yeah.
You should do your thing.
Well, I did want to point out, I love the hand-drawn visual style to it. And I don't mean some of these gorgeous hand-painted, it's not like Cuphead hand-drawn. This is like notebook paper hand-drawn, like scribbles and doodles. And I love the visual style of it. I forgot
to mention that. You're right. I think you're probably going to lead into that, too, when you mentioned the visual style, but the sound effects, too.
The sound effects are, like, all done by voice, so, like, pew, pew, it's hilarious.
I loved it. It was very hysterical to just sit there and play through it. Eventually, it becomes part of the game, and you don't notice it so much, but the charm itself doesn't go away. It's still awesome that it's there. First time you part, it goes like, pew, pew, pew.
I do have a gripe with the game, though. I'm not sure if you played... What platform did you play this on? The Switch. How was the text when you had to select your power-ups and your abilities when you level up?
I will say it's not large, but it's definitely readable. Like, I never found myself squinting or anything. And plus, they give you the big picture, too.
Because I don't know if this is because I was playing on the Xbox One X... or if it's something else, but the text on the console version, on the Xbox version, was unbelievably small. Like, I had to stand up out of my seat with a 65-inch TV. I had to get up out of my seat and walk up to the TV so I could read them.
A part of me feels like that may factor in, because for those who aren't familiar with it, whenever I do a Switch game review, unless it really needs to be done, I pretty much review all my stuff on the handheld version or handheld mode. Because I feel like if there's going to be issues, it's likely going to be happening on the handheld mode, with the exception of possibly like controller lag, which isn't typically the game's fault. That would be likely the system's fault. So I usually go with handheld. So likely the image was probably done better. It was optimized better for the handheld.
Possibly. I just know, like, we ran into the issue with the game Vicious Assault Llama Apocalypse, where the text at the bottom, the subtitles at the bottom, were microscopically small, and the developer never even knew about it because he didn't have an Xbox One X dev kit. So he didn't know the text was going to be that small. I don't know if it's the same issue with this, where they're just unaware of how small the text is, or if it was intentional, but they didn't really pay attention to how small the text was. I'll just say now, they need to increase the size of the text. I don't know if this is on all console versions or if it's just on the X or like the PS4 Pro.
Well, look at it this way. If they end up doing it, it can't really hurt the system. No one's going to go back later and go, this text is too big. It's too easy to read. I need to squint.
Yeah. Even still, $8 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think it's a buy it, honestly. It's a fun, simple game, twin stick shooter. And yeah, there's a bunch of those out there, but this one's pretty straightforward, quick. It's got the graphical charm, and the music is to die for. I love the music in this game.
I think I'm going to play the music on this show, too.
You should. Give it some love, man. It is worth it.
I'm going to play that driving theme.
Do, 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 do. This, I'm singing it.
It's so
good. I love that track.
It is such an awesome soundtrack.
Yes, it is.
But next game to talk about is called Radio Hammer Station. I guess the music theme is going on.
I was about to say, if it didn't, I'd have been like, what are you doing?
Developed and published by Arc System Works, released July 12th on the Switch for $6.99. A popular radio station spreading its love of groove with some of the best DJs in the world, providing tunes to groove to throughout the day. Its true purpose is to serve as the radio station of justice, beating evil down with a ginormous hammer. To ensure peace and harmony, Radio Hammer continues to go live with style. Pernell, what the hell is this game?
It's actually a lot more simplistic and straightforward than the description would lead you to believe. So, as far as the story goes, the game has one, so to speak, but it's not really one to chase down. Basically, weird threats are happening or occurring, and the Radio Hammer team goes out and whacks them with hammers. Or in the case of some characters, not some hammers. But No matter, but they all have like little weirdly animal companions that talk to them in the bottom corner of the screen. Like the main character has like a punk, like a secretarial rabbit, and then like a later character is like a rock bulldog. But basically, they all have talking animal companions. And every once in a while at the beginning of a stage, there'll be like a quick dialogue scene that takes place where the character for that level will talk to the animal going, "What's going on? People are crazy. Okay, I'll whack them because I'm cool." Da, da, da. And then it goes like radio time or something, and they start beating them up. And the way this is done is a rhythm music game in which as the soundtrack plays, two lanes will show up on the screen going from right to left, and enemies will run from right to left into the opponent or to your character. You are hitting the button in time with the music when the enemy runs over the crosshair reticle that's in front of your character. So it's like enemy on the lane one is, say, like the I love how I'm like walking over to my Switch because I don't know the damn buttons aside from by heart. But so basically the top lane would be the X button and the lower lane would be the B button. Enemies run over, you whack the button in time with it, take them down, get a perfect, good, great, or whatever. So that is pretty much the game. Every once in a while, though, an item will pop up behind you, like a present box, and you can hit the L button trigger to pick it up. Sometimes it's a good thing, such as like something that will increase the size of your reticle or something that will increase your fever gauge, or it'll be something bad, which will do the exact opposite. It'll decrease your fever gauge or reduce your hit points or something like that. Now, what does fever do? I have no idea. I've never noticed it. I'm going to guess it increases your score from hitting guys, but basically, when your fever gauge expands, the background does something weird, like based around the character you're playing as, and then you'll just be doing the same game. It's just the background looks different, which is why I believe it's probably just a score multiplier or something. But I never noticed because I was too busy timing my wax. At the end of each episode, per character, there is a boss fight, usually some kind of weird thing, like a giant busty robot that's firing missiles at you or something. But for as cool as the imagery is, and typically the best music on the episode is typically going to stem from those boss fights, unfortunately the gameplay itself is exactly the same, though. Just with missiles instead of perverts, or something like that. Yes, I did say it. You're whacking perverts off on a couple of levels. Yeah, I had to get that pun in there. What are you going to do?
Speaking of dicks.
Whack off perverts across 15 stages. But that is pretty much the game, with the exception of whenever you beat a level with 3 stars. Oh, I should say that then, too. Every level will have a 3-star goal. 3 different tasks that you can fulfill on the stage that acquire the stars. It might be something like get a certain combo, or don't miss anything, or get all the gift boxes, or avoid all the trap boxes, which are the negative gift boxes I mentioned earlier. Stuff like that. If you get all 3 of them, you'll get a 3-star ranking, which I believe is what unlocks another mode. And what another mode is remember how earlier I mentioned that you get 2 lanes with enemies coming down each one?
Mm-hmm.
Another mode is surprisingly not a more difficult mode. It's just a different way to play the song. Instead of 2 lanes, it's 1 lane, but the tempo is increased. So you get less time to time the hits, but you're only timing 1 button. So is that a better or worse thing? That's up for the player to decide. But at the same time, it's not so bad that they just give you a different way to play the game. You can choose whether to use another mode or not. Not a big deal. There are some unlockables, mostly in the form of you can unlock bonus songs in the, I guess, the jukebox mode or whatever to play. And I believe that may be related to getting 3-star rankings on stages. And also, you will get different hammers that will let you play different sound effects when you whack guys. Let me see. What else am I thinking of? I might be missing something here. Tra-la-la-la-la.
La-la-la-la.
Tra-la. I honestly think that well may be it. I mean, you unlock different characters, and each character has a different sort of style to the songs for their stage. And, like, for example, the main character might be a little poppy. The third character is rock music. You know, the middle guy is more hip-hoppy. And that's what I want to remember. Each stage is, it's weird. So it's, every time a song will play, you think would be one stage, but that would be incorrect for this game. There are a lot of very short tunes that factor in. So it might be like a 1-minute song, maybe 1 minute and 30 second song, if that. But some stages has you do multiple songs in a row. So you'll finish the song, do a jump up the street that will make the screen scroll a little bit, and then you'll do another song, but retain like your combo and your health and your fever gauge. every stage also doesn't have a new song. Sometimes you'll do a stage with a song you've already done in it. So it's just like a mixture of songs depending on how the developers decided they wanted the stage to flow. Like you might do, I don't know, Rainy Day Sunny. That didn't even sound right, but I bet that's a real song. Rainy Day Sunny on stage 2-1. But then on stage 2-3, you'll do Rainy Day Sunny, then Rainy Day Rainy, then Rainy Day Cloudy, all in succession. 1, 2, 3. And that's one stage considered. So you'll be hearing some repeated tracks. The music itself is hit or miss. It's a rhythm game, but I feel like a lot of the time, I mean, I will say that I never found myself going, oh, this music is boring. I don't even want to listen to this stuff. But I will say, whereas we were just earlier talking about wanting to play music from a twin stick shooter on our podcast, I didn't really feel like any of the music from this game was going to have me tapping my feet outside of the gameplay session. It was just kind of there, you know? Hmm. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? I don't know. Because if you're playing the game, it does the job of getting you to play through the stages and it motivates you. But at the same time, I didn't feel myself really gripping or feeling like I was really into the music itself. I just played the game. That is not to say that that could be everybody. I mean, music is subjective. Someone else might play this game and go, oh, this track is pretty freak sweet. I'm going to listen to this on my car radio. You might do that. I don't know. I'm just saying that I didn't get that sensation from this game. So, but there's a lot of content here, though, that's for sure. There's a lot of stages and whatnot. It's just, they're all the same. They all play the same. That's it.
Well, as it stands, $7, what do you think of it?
I'd say it's at least, I say it's a try it, though. It's not a deny it, because a deny it would be me saying I had zero fun with this game, or was not enjoyable, or it had a lot of ridiculous flaws to it. The game was not flawed. It just might not appeal to everybody based on the things I mentioned earlier on. Your enjoyment may vary, but it's definitely at least on the try it scale.
That's good.
Or is it?
Yes. I was eyeing this one up myself. A rhythm game for $7. That's my idea of a good time.
Yeah, but then the challenge is that even I think this is maybe exclusive to the Switch right now, but the Switch has an abundance of cheap rhythm games too.
It does.
So it's like, as much as it's like it's a cheap rhythm game, it's like, yeah, but even cheap rhythm games have steep competition on the Switch. So you got to go a little bit more than that to stand out on this system, which is kind of funny. I heard somebody earlier mention that the Switch is like the cell phone of the console generation. And I took that with a mixed bag, because on one hand, it does get like every port under the sun. But by that same token, I feel like you get a lot of good with the bad. Whereas like on the old Nintendo system, it was like you just get a lot of junk. Baby's True. First tea bag or something, I don't know. And this you get a lot of different stuff, and I feel like you get more good games than bad overall, even if you don't necessarily play them all.
True. Anyway, you mind if I jump in with one here? What the hell is that?
I don't know, I just felt like doing a sound, but yeah, go for it.
All right, because we have an email review from Dark Mika, who covered The Council Episode 3 Ripples, developed by Big Bad World, published by Focus Home Interactive, released July 24th on Xbox, PS4, and Steam for $6.99, or you could get the full season for $24.99. Episode 3 Ripples continues the story of Louis de Richer as plots are laid bare, characters reach their breaking point, and an unexpected, terrifying truth is uncovered. It will take all of Louis's, I never know which one to go with.
Louis Anderson? Are you controlling Louis Anderson in this game?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
But I'm guessing it's French, so I feel like it's got to be Louis.
Louis Anderson.
Louis de Richer. It will take all of his influence to prevent the situation from growing out of hand in this third episode of The Council. Let us see what Dark Mika has to say about this.
Open the book.
All right. The Council Episode 3 is, surprisingly, still a third-person choose-your-own-adventure game. Shocking, isn't it? As Louis de Richer, you finally find your mama. Oh my god, I can't read already. Mostly because she put a gun to your head, completely batshit insane, delusional, not believing you are you, but whatever. She tells you not to trust a certain someone and do everything you can to fuck him over. Because, you know, she's obviously still stable, having pointing a gun in your face, claiming you're not her son, even though no one else looks like you. It's also finally time for the meeting of all the people who have gathered. The reason why your mother was sent here in the first bloody place, now because no one knows you found Ish her. You're taking her place in this meeting that you're obviously completely and utterly unprepared for. The episode is much more focused on conversation and politics rather than doing puzzles. There's one glaring issue I found in it. The murder in the episode 2, which I found happens no matter what, kind of just falls by the wayside. It's temporarily mentioned and then it's just gone again. However, your mom doesn't seem to be the one who did it, which, well, she was one of the three people I thought may have done it, and I was heavily leaning towards her. Or maybe she's a good actress, which is fully possible, and she really did do it. So much more mystery, so much intrigue. Thankfully, the lip-syncing issues from episode 2 have been fixed. However, Potato, my cat, is standing in front of my monitor right now, and I can't continue reading this until I pick her up and move her off my desk.
She actually typed that?
No, that was me trying to read this email, but my cat jumped in.
She has a cat named Potato, too! What the heck?
Potato's been sleeping next to my desk this whole time. She gets up and sits right in front of my monitor, so thank you, cat. Anyway, thankfully, the lip-syncing issues from episode 2 have been fixed. However, in episode 3, there's a new problem because they just can't catch a break. Many of the conversation and cutscene bits have a tendency to have 1 to 2 places where it gets jagged cut in animation, where it suddenly characters move rather janky or it just outright pauses movement on screen. During these issues, the audio stays fine, it's the visuals that get messed up, but only for a couple of seconds each time, then it's fine again like nothing happened. Very noticeable because the animations are so well done, and then suddenly they're just not right. Then they go back to amazing again, so it ends up looking weird, kind of breaks the flow, sometimes because it's just so odd. It's on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $7, totally worth it. However, I suggest buying either the full collection for $30 or buying the first episode and then try the season pass. You like it, which would then cost $32. Although I believe my notes say that the full season's $24.99, so I might have to double check what's going on with that.
Ooh, maybe she saw a sale price or something. Never know.
I wonder if it's the first episode and then like the rest of the season is $25, maybe.
That's possible, because I know sometimes a company will like price a starting episode at a lower price or something just to get you in. And it's like, hey, now that you like it, here's a package. Buy everything.
That stuff always throws me off because I look at one thing and it has one price. Look at another thing and it has a different price. If you buy them all separately, you're spending like $35 if you buy them all individual. It just confuses me.
Well, on the positive, this will give you an excuse if you want to go back into the episode later and like do like one of those like stupid dub overs. Like, you can get this game for $40. And if you add it now, you can also get it for $40. And that could be fun.
I'm Why way not? Too lazy to do something like that. This is all staying in, and I don't even care.
That's how I feel.
Anyway, this third episode has continued the game at a pretty high quality. I can't imagine they'd fuck it up in the last two episodes. But I think it's really worth just buying the whole thing outright for $30. I put 6 to 8 hours into each episode, so by the end, it'll probably be a 30 to 40 hour game. And that's just one playthrough. It's meant to be played through a couple of times at the least. As such, you're definitely getting your money's worth. Good stuff.
I would have to say so. It's always good to get your money's worth on a game, boy. That's for damn sure.
Indeed. And now for next time that when episode 4 rolls around, I'll have to make sure I have the right price in my notes.
And then you still have to do that voice, though.
$27.
It's available for $31.99.
Exactly. Now we're talking. That's a lot.
Anyway, one more game to talk about with you, and that is called Iroh Hero. I still don't know the name of that one. Developed by Artax Games, published by East Asia Soft, finally released in America July 26th on the Switch for $12.99. In a world where humans are used as power supplies, only one man has the will to change it all. Iroh Hero is a vertical shoot-em-up with beautiful pixel art graphics inspired by many old-school classics. Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, basically, you are in a ship that is piloted by a kid named Iroh, and it functions similar to the ship in Ikaruga. And what that means is by hitting the L trigger, I want to say it's the L trigger, but it might be R, you will go from a blue polarity to a red polarity. And as you are scrolling through the stages, enemies will come down from the top. Usually, it's not too many different types of enemies, unfortunately, but a number of them will fly after you. And what happens is you can either stay the same color as the ship's projectiles to absorb them, but not be able to damage the ship, or switch to polarities in order to kill the ship, but also be able to take damage from the bullets. Every once in a while, an enemy will also try to crash into you, and regardless of what polarity you are, it will freaking kill you. Basically, every stage is a sequence of going from top to bottom. Strangely lengthy stages. Like, for a shooter, these levels are oddly long. Like, I've died more than a few times, almost, because I was like, why won't it stop? I should be done by now. But it keeps freaking going. Power-up-wise, there is only one, but there's a score mechanic that I believe I've noticed where you can shoot, like, enemies, and every once in a while, like, a weird dot will show up. And from there, every time you shoot an enemy, the orb will absorb the bullets or absorb the debris from the ship that you blew up. And I believe you get a score bonus when you pick it up. So either when you pick it up or just by virtue of when you're done shooting it. But all I do know is that it factors into getting your freaking score. And you'll notice that as you play the game. And there's one other thing you could pick up, which is the actual power, where when you grab it, I believe there's like one per stage, but it will cause your gun to have like sideways, like horizontal fire instead of just vertical fire. It ends up coming in pretty handy too, because every once in a while enemies can kind of flood the screen a little bit. It gets to be a bit cluttered, and having that extra firepower comes in handy. They go out of their way a bit to kind of get you to have to switch back and forth between the different polarities and being concerned about being in harm's way when you do it, because you would want to tell yourself, well, I guess as long as the enemy's red, I'll just be red and won't take damage. But when the game lumps red and blue together after you, you won't necessarily be able to have that opportunity, and you'll be kind of figuring out what is the most likely thing to kill you immediately and try to take that out first by switching colors. But I did have a few issues with the game in general, though, and it's another case of, you know, it's up to the buyer to make that call for themselves, but the game tells a story. At the beginning of the game, it has a nice cool little comic book strip that plays out. Well, not comic book, but, you know, CG, not CG, just a bunch of freaking pictures with text at the bottom. I don't know what the hell that shit's called. It's a thing, okay? But anyway, it does that. And then when the game starts, it does that thing similar to how a lot of those arcade re-releases are doing it, where they'll have the two bars, like the different divide, the side panels on the left and right. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, characters will be talking between the two panels. So you'll see a face and then text below the face on both sides of the screen. But this is happening while you're doing the actual shooting stuff, too. So if you're playing a shooter, you are not paying attention to that. You're too busy trying not to die. So while I get it as a cool artistic bit, I feel like if you're trying to do a whole story element to a game, you should at least do that when you're safe enough to not have to worry about enemies attacking you. But it's hard to gauge. I mean, because ultimately, if you don't care about the plot, then that's not going to matter. You're just shooting stuff. But in the event that you find yourself interested in what's going on, you're probably going to end up taking an L just to read it and then coming back and trying it later when you can ignore it. I don't know. But, I mean, that's pretty much how the game works there. There's a few, like, cool stage gimmicks that pop up every once in a while, such as, like, reflecting fire, where, like, you can only shoot the reflector with the right color bullet in order for the bullets to reflect off of it. And otherwise, it'll just absorb it. But for the most part, I feel like that and also the ship's speed were my only major gripes. What I mean by ship speed is that it moves slow as freaking molasses. I can't speak for everybody, but when I play my shmups, regardless of difficulty of the shmup, I want speed in my ship. I'm the guy that picks up 3 speed boosts in Gradius. I'm the guy who just automatically goes like level 4 in Ikaruga because I need my ship to be able to maneuver. So when you're dodging stationary long platforms or obstructions, actually, that's a better word, dodging large horizontal obstructions and your ship is like crawling across the screen, or you're trying to hit that last enemy on the other side of the map to get that extra score bump, your ship can barely make it over. That's an annoyance. And I feel like almost there's no excuse to have that when you could just as well put, like, say, hit the minus button or the select button on other consoles or whatever, and there you can speed up. Your ship will go faster. Like, they should just put that in there. There are about, let's say, like 8 stages or so, concluding the story load. But once you've done that, you can do an arcade mode, which is being the entire game on 3 credits, which is 1 continue with 3 lives attached to it. Sorry, 4 lives attached to it. And then there's the 1 credit clear, which you can unlock, which is just as it sounds. You got to beat the game in 1 credit.
Oh, man.
But, oh, and the thing I need to mention, harking back to the first review I did this episode, the freaking music, man. The guy that East Asia Soft hired to do the music on this game deserves some cake. Because the music in this game is a gem. It's interesting how, like, though I wasn't really too jazzed about playing the game as a whole, mostly because of the speed thing, which is an unfortunate component. It really does hurt the game for me in that regard. I will say the music was bumping. Like, you ever play a game where you're like, the music makes you want to go one more time?
Yeah.
I feel like I got that experience with this game. The artwork is good in the game. The enemy patterns are okay because of the whole color trajectory, the whole color polarity switching bit. It makes it interesting. But the music was the real hit. I love the music in this game. Give that guy some cake, and it better be Key Lime or Meringue, because that takes work to be. I like the music. The gameplay itself, it's not a bad game. I'm not going to go that far. But I will say they could have done more with that speed, especially with their, they could have done a little bit more with it. They're charging that kind of cash for it. Something as simple as the speed could be nice. But I will say, if you don't care about trying to read the plot on the side of the screen, which, again, you could be one of those people who can do the thing where one of his eyes crosses and the other eye stays straight and just do everything together, in which case this isn't a concern to you at all. But if you don't have wacky eyes and you are just trying to play the game but you want to see what's going on, it might be a bit of a hindrance for you until you get adjusted to it. But it is a functional working shooter. It's not a bad game. I did have a bit of fun playing it. It's just, they need to get on the ball with that speed. That speed needs to be available in this game somehow.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to have 5-minute long levels.
True. But minor gripes aside, $13, what's your official verdict?
I'd give it a try, especially if you're aching for some Ikaruga polarity switching, because I want to say Ikaruga is the only game, minus maybe one that's eluding me right now, that does that in a shmup. And it's a mechanic that I can't get enough of, personally.
Nice.
Also, I forgot, you absorb enough bullets from the same color, and you can unleash a large electric shock thing that kind of like attacks everybody on the screen, like a bomb.
Oh, nice.
I got to make sure I squeeze that in there.
Got to squeeze it all in, Purnell.
And how? Dick jokes.
Yeah, speaking of dicks.
Oh, we're immature. Sorry, listeners.
We are. That is, if you're listening to my show and you still don't get that we're immature people who like dick and fart jokes, why are you... Is this your first show or something? I don't know. But Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
No, I feel like everything was pretty square for once. I don't know. I'm looking forward to the next one, that's for sure. And maybe even get more of that freaking Master of Mayhem in tonight, because I do like that jingle.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Banner Saga 3, developed by Stoic, published by Versus Evil, released July 26th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $24.99. As the world continues to crumble around you, who can you trust? How will you protect your allies? And what choices will you make as darkness draws near? Checking this one out and closing out the trilogy, Len Stewart, how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good, Joe. How you doing?
Doing all right. Doing okay. How was Banner Saga 3?
I loved it, man. I think the story was the thing that really got me in the Banner Saga in general, 1, 2, and 3. But 3 especially, I mean, because it was like, you know, it's the closer. You know, it's got to be good. It's the closer. I also noticed it was a little shorter than the first two, too. I was kind of thinking, like, oh, man, this is going to be like one of those things where it's going to be just as long. And I'm like, no, it was just really just the build up to the climax, I think, in the third installment. But I mean, the gameplay was just as sharp in this one as it had been in the first two. You sent me a patch notes later on the thing, and I got the new patch, and before that I did notice some like jittery kind of things happening with it, but I mean, it was playable. It wasn't like, oh my god, this patch, you know, was the end all to be all thing. So I really did enjoy it. I'm really thankful for Stoic to like letting us check it out and review it and talk about it. It's just definitely one of the most enjoyable games that you've gotten me to play. So,
well, I'm absolutely glad you enjoyed it. For those who aren't familiar with the series, what kind of game is it?
It's a strategy RPG, but it has strategy RPG-like elements to it, but it's more of like a... I did say in an earlier episode that it's kind of like Oregon Trail versus meets Game of Thrones, and I kind of feel like wrong about that now, because like Oregon Trail, you needed to like have like supplies and like other shit to really kind of worry about. Whereas like in the Banner Saga, it kind of already had all that shit like for you, you know, like I didn't really have to worry about like my supplies as much, you know, or getting like certain things at stores to make sure that I didn't run out of something. Everything was kind of there, but I think the way that it was kind of like Oregon Trail was like, you know, the moving on pet from one environment to the next as like a group of travelers, you know, and I thought that was pretty unique to that, and not only that unique to the, this game, but unique to the strategy RPG genre as a whole, because it's. You know, if you've played a lot of strategy RPGs, you don't really get that, like, camaraderie, like, I think that you get from this game. Whereas, like, you know, you actually grow with these characters, and these characters really have a lot of interaction between one another, and there's a lot of conflict between not only just the characters that, you know, you gather, but, you know, the characters that you come along to meet in your journey, and who are just like regular dudes traveling with your caravan. I thought that was a really refreshing, take on the whole game, really, you know?
Yeah.
There were some things that I thought about in Banner Saga 3 that kind of drug on the game more than it did on the first two, which was like the actual battles. They felt very... I don't know, like, they kind of, like, felt monotonous to me, where, like, they didn't really make as much of a difference to your outcome versus, like, the first two games. Like, in the first two games, if you were to die or something were to happen, you'd probably, like, lose a party member or something really tragic happens. But I think since it's the third installment and they wanted everything to kind of coalesce, they did away with that kind of thing. They just were like, oh, well, we can't really have the guys die, but if you die, we're not going to really have too many bad critical things happen to you, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, the battles didn't feel, like, as critical as they needed to be in those moments.
You mentioned that the third one felt like the climax to the story, despite being a bit shorter. Was it more action-packed this time around?
Actually, I felt that like the first two games were more action packed than the third one. The third one, I mean, you know, the closes out the story, of course, but the ending boss battle. There was a couple of ways that you could have gone about the boss battle. You could have either, you know, chosen one thing, and it kind of ends the game in a peaceful way. But you know that, like, if you would have went the other way, some crazy shit would have happened, and did, because I saved beforehand, and then I went and I chose the other path, and and then you actually get that boss battle at the end, and you're like, yes, it's really hard to kind of, I would think it's kind of hard to play any of these games in a single sit down, because you really definitely want to replay these games a few times to kind of, you know, get the full arc of the story. I felt myself like having to go back like a bunch of saves back and kind of pick other means of options to get different outcomes. And I thought that was really interesting. But I feel like for your casual gamer, they're just going to blow through this and be like, okay, that was a game, you know?
Without giving away any spoilers, was the resolution to the trilogy satisfying?
Yes, it was absolutely satisfying. I mean, like I said, you know, the story was the strongest part of the Banner Saga in general. And I come to expect the greatness to follow on to the third and final chapter. So, and it did. Of course it did. You know, they really did a great job with it. But I would say that, you know, if you are just a casual gamer, you might blow past the ending, you know, just because you're kind of like, oh, that was it. Come on, you know. But, I really did like the story. The story at the end was very, very satisfying.
Awesome. Well, for people who have been on the journey this whole time, $25 for the conclusion. What do you think of it?
$25 for the conclusion is a little high for me, to be honest. because it only took me 7 hours and 30 minutes to complete the game. Whereas in the first two, the first one I spent 11 and a half hours, and the second one I spent 10 and a half hours. So for the third one, I was like, oh, this is going to be just as long or even longer. No, shorter. I was like, oh, well, what's that about, you know? But I, you know what, I can't blame them, because they were probably like, well, this is all we got, you know, for this last game. So
yeah, it's better than having things drag out and just become monotonous. It's like, all right, come on, let's go. Let's just wrap this up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I really did like the story. I mean, the story really, it was the strongest part of this. I can't say it enough.
Nice. Sounds good. Well, for the entire trilogy, I believe the entire trilogy you could pick up for $50 on various platforms. $50 for the full story. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. $50 for the whole story. Absolutely. I mean, you got plenty of gameplay there. You probably have like anywhere from 25 to 30 hours of gameplay. And the first two are definitely worth just the $50 right there. The third one is just like a good capper, you know. It's the resolution at the end, you know, that you would come to expect from any RPG. So you're really paying for the ending for the third installment. But the first two are like the journey, you know. It's the real journey happening. There are some like things that I didn't like about the series as a whole. Like there was in a lot of strategy RPGs, you come to find that there are a number of side quests. In Banner Saga, there was no side quest. It is very just like one thing to the next, you know. And there is no like side things. That said, though, like you know, in the story itself, you can choose to go on different paths. So I guess instead of side quests, you have different paths that you can go in on the main story.
So it encourages that replayability.
Yeah, exactly. The story pacing. I felt like the story pacing in the first half of the first one, was really slow and a little tough to get into. But like once you were in it, like you know, you definitely felt like emotionally invested, and it like ramps up pretty fast. Which is really good, because I was like, oh no, I hope this isn't like boring the whole time, you know, like I can't do this now, you know, but no, it was great. It like ramped up like just at a great time, and the battles became more interesting and challenging. The one thing that they did in the second and third, which I thought was pretty interesting, was they added these things called battle or party reinforcements, which so like you'll be fighting like an army of dredge, which are like the undead guys, and they come in like waves. So like if you beat all these guys, you can actually choose to continue that battle. So, for example, like I beat 5 dredge, and my party is the only party that's standing. And the game gives you a choice to either continue or like split before more dredge come. And I would always choose to split, because I was like, yeah, half my guys are already dead, so I don't know. But what happens is it allows you to have like a period in between the battles for you to take characters that you have in reserves and put them on the battlefield for that next battle if you choose to do it. I thought that was a real, real nice touch, especially like with me. I know a lot of people don't like really grinding in RPGs in general. I love grinding. I don't know what it is. It's just that, you know, I just really love how now that you're able to grind in the second and third installments. I thought that was really cool, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you had a great time with the trilogy overall.
I did. I thought the, you know, I also thought the music was excellent too. It gives really a lot of emotion to like all the scenes and every scene, really. I love the series overall, man. I mean, I can't get over how good it is. And you know, it's a real adventure. You know, it's actually more of an adventure than say like other strategy RPGs that I've played, like even like Square Enix's, you know, Tactics Ogre and Final Fantasy Tactics. I felt like the stories were there weren't as emotional, like you know, it didn't grab me emotionally as like this as this story did. I think it's because, like, you know, the choices that you make have real loss or gain consequences, where in those games you always get the same result no matter what you pick.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Len, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up on the Banner Saga?
No, other than that, I think everybody should definitely give this game a spin. I mean, it's great, you know? That's about it, man.
All right, next game to talk about is called Hello Neighbor, developed by Dynamic Pixels, published by Tiny Build, released July 27th for $29.99 on PS4, $39.99 on the Switch. Hello Neighbor is a stealth horror game about sneaking into your neighbor's house and figuring out what he's hiding in the basement. Play against an advanced AI that learns from your actions. Checking this one out. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
How's things?
Things are okay. Getting ready for a gimmick show, which is good because, you know, finally doing that.
How's the album coming along?
We're still working on it. We're, like, actually working on it, not working on it, and then 5 years later still working on it.
I want to play music from it sometime this year.
Okay, we'll try and make that happen.
Awesome. So how's Hello Neighbor?
Hello Neighbor. Well, this is certainly an interesting one. It's hard for me to figure out what audience this game is for. So what it is it's a first person game, with, it's neither a shooter nor really an action game. It's kind of like a first person horror puzzle game. But it's set in this really cartoony way. Like, the graphics look really, reminiscent of PC games of the distant past. And like somebody, I noticed somebody compared it to the, to that one section in Psychonauts that happens in the suburbs, which is like my favorite part of that game. but basically what it is that you're a kid, an unnamed, boy of some, who probably lives on the neighborhood. We don't really know, but he's kicking a ball around and he, you know, the game kind of shows you real briefly how you interact with it. And it's very simple. Like, you run at things, you can run a little faster, and then you use a button to pick up something and it assigns it to one of four buttons on the directional pad. So you can only hold four things at once. And, once you figure that out, then you turn and find that, or you hear a scream and you turn around and see that your creepy mustache neighbor, man is doing something probably wrong. And and there's screaming and there's thudding and there's struggling. And then you walk up to the window and, you see that he's locking a door, and then he turns around and there's scary piano music that plays. And then he like runs through the window and grabs you, and then the game starts.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The game starts with you outside of the house having not been grabbed. I have no idea. But that's your first indication that this game is really surreal and I would say dreamlike, in the sense that nothing ever seems to stay permanent. So you can pick up literally any object that is pick-upable, like, and you can throw it. You're supposed to use those objects to interact, to get into the house and find a series of like cartoonishly large keys and throw them at locks. Literally, you have to throw it exactly correctly for it to unlock the door. Otherwise, you just see your guy like toss the key at the lock and it falls to the ground.
Nice.
But yeah, like you unlock these different things. You try and find out what's happening in that basement. All the while, your neighbor guy is in any kind of indiscernible location. Like, you can distract him and that'll buy you some time, but you honestly never really know where he is until he's like right on top of you. The only indication that you get is that the screen will, the area surrounding the screen will start to like shake and get like constricted, and you'll hear the scary piano music again, which is basically the only music in the game. So it's total silence and then scary piano music. And
that's like the Jaws theme coming after you.
Exactly, yeah, and it's just the creepy guy who, it never actually shows what he does to the kid when he catches him. You just see him come at you, and then you just start outside the house again. Although one time I was inside the house, and I was like, oh, this is moving things along. Now I can move around in here. And I walked through this hallway that didn't seem connected to anything, and then out of the window, the neighbor's driving his car around, and then he wrecks it into a tree, and then just, like, sits down by the car, and then you just do other things, and like, then you end up back outside again with nothing else happening. So again, it's like, I'm not exactly sure what this game's trying to tell me in terms of what the story is or where I'm supposed to be at any point or what I'm supposed to do. All I know is that like, you walk around and you interact with objects and then try and get into different parts of the house without him catching you. Everything else is purposely left a complete mystery. So, it's really interesting.
So, what did you think of it?
Well, like, okay, so there's things I like about it. What I like about it is that it plays really fast and loose with physics. So, like, one way that you can get into the top part of the house is by stacking empty cardboard boxes and just jumping on top of them. And that's not really how that's supposed to work. The other thing is that sometimes just to have something to do, I'd pick up the lawnmower, lure the neighbor outside, and just throw it at his head. And it would just bounce off, and he'd be like, "Arr!" Because nobody actually talks in the game. Don't. Like, even when you see writing, it's in, like, pidgin English. It's like the letters are all scrumbled up, like, where they don't make any sense. So, like, and when you turn on a TV or a radio, it's in some kind of language that's... I don't think it's actually a language that exists, but it might. So, like, the game will give you nothing in terms of information. You just have to interact with it and figure it out. It was compelling because it wasn't too hard to find things that were interesting that interacted with other things. So I feel like, you know, if you get through enough of it, then, you know, you'll eventually, like, I looked ahead a little bit, and yeah, it opens up to be a lot of different things. Like, you go to different parts of this kid's life, like... him as an adult with both his old house and the neighbor's house torn down, but you still have to do things. And then it goes back to you being a kid. Like I said, it's very surreal and kind of doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So that's either a complaint or something that might compel you to play the game. But I would say don't expect a like really cohesive story here. And I purposely didn't look at the ending, so I don't actually know what happens. You'll know, like, if it's just there's nothing revealed in the first couple hours of the game for sure.
So the, like, open-endedness is both a positive and a negative.
Yeah, I would say so. I've definitely never played a game like this, so that's one thing for it. But, you know, that's always a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Is that you don't know what to expect, but you don't really have anything else to compare it to.
Yeah, it's a very unique one, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But $30 on PS4, $40 on the Switch. What do you think of it?
It's hard for me to recommend this as a full price game. I would give it a try. It
makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, for $40, you can get the longest 5 minutes, which
which I know you love. You bring that up a lot.
I'm obsessed with it. But yeah, like it's. I'm sure that it's that price because there's a physical version coming out. That's usually what happens. I mean, definitely check it out. The publisher themselves actually have a lot of gameplay videos up and stuff, so you can actually watch what's going on. I can only say from the playing it perspective, the action is actually really good. It's very easy to control. It's, you know, it's bright and colorful, doesn't have a soundtrack to speak of, but I mean, you know, past that, it's one of those kind of things where just kind of look at a couple of minutes of gameplay and see if this is your thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Arcade Archives Renegade, developed and published by Hamster, released June 28th on the Switch for $7.99. Save your good friend Hiroshi, your enemy, the mob. In this battle, your life is on the line. Renegade is an action game that was released by Technos Japan in 1986, where players control a vigilante named Mr. K, who fights a variety of street gangs on his way to save his girlfriend. Chris, how's Renegade?
Renegade. This is, it's an odd choice, as far as the Technos, you know, oeuvre, whatever pretentious way or whatever way you pronounce that word.
pretty sure it's Uvra.
Uvra, yeah. But Technos Japan, as we all know, is responsible for Double Dragon and the River City Ransom series. So this is their, I think it's like their first foray into this style of arcade action. And to Double Dragon fans, it will be very familiar. So you you start off in this room, and you know your button that's on the left will make you punch or kick to the left, depending on where the enemy is. And then the button on the right will make you punch or kick to the right. So the thing is to punch enemies, grab onto them, throw them, and all of this, again, it's one of those things where if you don't know Double Dragon, it may appear really confusing, but if you played a Double Dragon before, then you kind of know what to expect. But unlike Double Dragon, this actually isn't an action platformer. It's simply a series of rooms that you beat up all the bad guys in and then move on. It's very simplistic in that sense. So what I can say about it is that with the original arcade version, it's very difficult. It's really, really hard to like beat bosses, because unless you know how to handle them, they'll run up to you, pummel you into submission, and you won't ever get a chance to actually attack them. You kind of have to learn the game's mechanics a little bit, into like counters and using jump kicks to kind of stop people running at you, all the while getting all these other guys off of you. So it's very much a very busy, action-y kind of game. It's relatively short once you've mastered it. It's got like 5 levels, I think. Maybe have one more. I think it's 5 levels, though. And then, you know, rinse and repeat. So this is like classic arcade brawler at its classicest.
Classicist, is that a word?
I'm sure Ernest Cline has used it.
So $8 on this one, what do you think of it?
$8. I think this one is a really good piece of history. It's great for people who enjoy really hard brawlers, and again, who liked like the original Double Dragon and stuff. I think that as far as Technos games go, it's not as strong as Double Dragon, and certainly I think River City Ransom was their best work. But this is the granddaddy of River City Ransom. Like, you'll even notice similarities in the character design. So it's one of those games that for newcomers to the brawler thing, I think it's going to wind up being a little too difficult, and ultimately maybe not as rewarding. I would more recommend something like Double Dragon 4, which I had a lot of fun with. But to the arcade aficionado, this is definitely one of those essentials, so I would say pick it up.
Sounds good. Final game to talk about tonight is called Pixel Lines DX 500 More Puzzles, developed by Score Studios, published by Rainy Frog, released July 26th on the Switch for $9.99. Draw lines to connect pairs of numbers to complete a hidden puzzle in this feverishly addictive picture puzzle game. Connect numbers of the same color using the same number of blocks as the number. Easing controls let you draw line after line as you gradually reveal the picture. Once you start, you'll be hooked. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right. And I forgot to actually ask you before we started recording. Is this the same developer as the last one I reviewed, the Phil's?
No.
Philippix, and it's a different one. Okay. Yes. All right, cool. Then I won't compare it too much to those. I will say, as far as general pit cross style games go, this has been my favorite one so far.
I absolutely love the Pixel Line series.
Yeah.
There was a version of it on these puzzler games that came out for the 3DS and the DS, you know, years ago. And when I saw a standalone version of it, I was thrilled. And I am happy that I get to expose someone else to the Pixel Lines games, because I love them so much.
This is like the ultimate fun, like, puzzle, like, sort of using math, but also, like, you know, solving a standard sort of puzzle picture thing. I don't know how to describe it, because I'm not super into these games usually, but this one, I actually was just doing puzzle after puzzle after puzzle. I had to stop myself, like, literally. And what I love about this one is that, and, you know, this isn't to say anything bad about any of the others, but I really appreciate that this one has a super gradual difficulty curve. So, like, your whole first area, like, it asks, it's school subjects, and each puzzle is actually 18 by 18. And so, while the puzzles can get super huge, up to 128 by 128, like, it keeps you in the 18 by 18 for a long time, and I really appreciate that. Okay, so, what's different about this game than, like, your standard kind of Picross is that, so the numbers are on the field. It's a grid, of course, and you're supposed to color in the correct squares in order to create a picture that then they celebrate and, you know, you get to move on. In this one, the numbers are directly on the board, and the which number it is going to tell you how many squares it's going to take up. Now, every number has to connect to another number, the exact same number. So if you have a 3, then you have to find another 3 and connect them. So with a 3, it's very easy, because if you're only filling in 3 spaces, that means there's only going to be 1 space between the 2 numbers, and so you can easily find the other 3. But they get up to like 9, 10, 11, you know.
15.
And yes. So the trick here is that none of the lines can cross over each other. So you have to find, like, if you're connecting a 6 and, like, you have, like, 3 sixes around that you could reach, you have to find the 1 6 that will allow the other sixes to also be crossed. So in that sense, that's where the challenge comes in. You'll find yourself kind of drawing in the most obvious ones first, and then sort of using the leftover blank space to be like, oh, okay, this is where the 9 goes. And man, you do that so much, it just starts becoming automatic, and then you're just like sitting there filling in pictures. And
then hours have passed.
Yes, and that is exactly what I look for in a puzzle game. The controller action is pretty good. I think this is more recommended as a touchscreen thing, but I'm happy to report that both are perfectly fine, and you know, you'll lose hours to it anyway. I really, really dug the music, especially the title screen music. It sounds like a really good Coldplay song or something. It like kind of has a U2 Coldplay vibe, and I was like, this is a little too epic for a puzzle game. I keep expecting a rock concert to like break out with you know, dreary English piano echo guitars and stuff.
Oh, God.
That's just me being pithy, though. I actually really, really love the song. I like sat there and listened to it for a while. But yeah, so it's basically just filling in those squares. The puzzles themselves, like in the 18 by 18, God bless them. Like they had some pictures. I was just like, I don't understand what this is, and I'm being told what it is. It's like, this is physical education. I was like, I don't understand. But then some of them are really easy. It's like chemistry is, you know, Urban Meyer flask. What do they call those?
Beaker.
A beaker, sure. I need to watch Breaking Bad again. So I'll learn what all the chemistry set stuff means. But yeah, so this is one that, like I said, it starts you off in 18 by 18s, and it kind of gradually makes the numbers a little longer. It places them in a little bit more challenging areas. You just find yourself learning how to play the game faster and faster, and then, you know, as you move on from like one world to the next world to the next world, it's like it becomes 32 by 32 grids, 64 by 64 grids, and finally, like I said, the 128 by 128s, which I'm really excited to get into. But
have you played any of the 128s by 128s?
I started to, but
yeah, you're gonna have to set an afternoon aside for one of those.
Yeah, which I like. I like that there's a puzzle game out there that's this easy to play and yet can take that long to like complete the thing and still feel satisfying while doing it. So as far as the number puzzle games go, like so far, this one's my favorite. So I hope they come out with more.
Well, there's already one other one that you could pick up since this one is 500 more puzzles, by the way, that's a lot of fucking puzzles for a game.
Yeah. That's an excessive amount of puzzles. Well done, guys.
Yeah. So $10 on this one. I already know I'm going to be buying it as soon as I could get a Nintendo card. What's your verdict?
Yeah, I say also buy it. This is a great entry level game for people who want to feel smart by doing number grid puzzles. You know, and then after that, move on to the harder ones or buy the other game if that is indeed out there on the Switch.
Indeed.
I know I'll be seeking it out, so.
Yeah, I love the first one. I cannot wait to buy the second. I love these games.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks for jumping on and chatting with me. Thanks again to Purnell and Len for coming on as well. Music, we're going to play some stuff from, what the hell is the name? State of Anarchy, Master of Mayhem. I always get those words mixed up, but cool soundtracks. We're going to play some stuff from there. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
No. My cat was trying to end it by, like, walking around everything.
Meow.
Meow. Stop it, cat.